This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 7th of June, 2023. Well, I think we're going to talk about something really interesting today because I'm not sure we have any answers here, but we've noticed some curious behavior in the market. And one of the signs of that is that we put the Russell 2000 continuous future up on slide two rather than the S&P 500 because there was much more remarkable movement there. And a very significant rally in the Russell 2000 yesterday, whereas the broader market, at least the big indices, were slightly unchanged, maybe very slightly positive on the day. And then just noticing on our Saxo Equity theme baskets, Peter, just visually, you see that one-year performance of some of those baskets for like payments, green transformation, energy storage, e-commerce, some of the worst performing and the worst performing, four of the worst performing five baskets were some of the best performers yesterday. So it just feels like there was some kind of weird shift. And then you also noticed, and something I had been remiss in not noticing, we've seen quite a collapse in the VIX and volatility here. It just feels like something weird is going on underneath what appears to be a pretty calm surface. But what are your thoughts here? I think it's suggests that we need to really get our nose to the ground here on what's going on.
Yeah, it's. I think the move in the VIX index is pretty significant because we've gone from 17, 18-ish levels to closing below 14 yesterday in very short fashion. Four or five trading sessions, and we're down to levels we haven't seen since the pandemic broke out, and I think that's worth mentioning. That volatility compression from the options market, it tells you, I think, a lot of aggressive bets are being put on the long side. I think that's also being highlighted in the put call ratios across different parts of the equity market. And then you have that big rally in the Russell 2000, as you mentioned, driven by a reversal trade. So the worst performers, those with the worst momentum, was the big winners yesterday. And things are always amplified, of course, in the Russell 2000 because of the lower liquidity you have in these small names. And I think it takes us to if I go with slide four, then John, you can circle back to talk about another point of the equity market and what's happening in the S&P 500 equal weighted index. But if we stay with the Russell 2000. There's a different way you can look at it. So the question is, what is happening in the Russell 2000? I was just trying to zoom out a little bit. The Russell 2000 represents the 2000 stocks with the highest liquidity outside the Russell 1000, which are the 1000 biggest on liquidities. You have that long range of small caps, which is very well famous equity factor. And if you take the total return on Russell 2000 against Nasdaq 100, you can basically see that we have been in one long decline since 2016 against the very narrow technology kings in the Nasdaq 100 there, and we basically just recently collapsed to a new low in that ratio. If we take the Russell 2000 against the value index of the total U.S. equity market, what is called the MSCI USA Value Index, and again, to do it on a total return basis, you can see the Russell 2000 was extremely overbought into that peak in February 2021 when everything just reached into its zenith before it came down. It also was the high point of the ARK Innovation Fund, Cathie Wood's fund there. And since then, Russell 2000 come down. If you put it in the broader perspective there against the value complex, it looks like we're just flat in a range. So sometimes, should we overemphasize certain signals, Johnson? Should we not? Are we just trying to find something because we want to see something? I don't know. I don't have the questions. I think what's going on in the VIX market carries more value. And then your story on the S&P 500 equal weighted index, I think that is probably where the signal is.
Yeah, and it could be some making much ado about not much at all or even nothing. I just find it an interesting signal when some very badly underperforming sectors are suddenly popping up. It suggests to me either somebody's taking profit on a trade that's gone very well for them for a long time, or maybe putting on a new trade, betting that there's going to be some kind of shift in behavior. But yeah, the equal weight just shows really the same thing, that the breadth of the market is pretty boring. We're right smack in the range between the very lows in the market, and I think that was October of last year, and the equal weight, at least high for the year, which was much earlier this year. So in other words, this is a quarterly rebalanced equal weight across all S&P 500 names that you're seeing on slide three. And it's just in a very different place from where the, of course, the very heavy market cap leaders have taken the index, especially the NASDAQ 100 recently. We need to move swiftly along, though, here. And not a whole lot going in the FX market, but I think Aussie dollar is still very interesting. The whole theme and mini narrative that has developed around the RBA and possibly the Bank of Canada today on whether these whether the Bank of Canada will join the RBA and being the next central bank to restart a tightening regime after a significant pause. Aussie versus the dollar still not breaking through that really critical 0.67 level. We had some very ugly export data out of China overnight, -7.5% year on year. I don't think that fits well with the Australian dollar rebound here. And it brings to mind thoughts of stimulus, et cetera. But the commodity break up is really needed. I think a solid further boost in those key industrial commodities, things like copper, iron ore, really needed to excite a more sustained Aussie rally. And I think some better news needs to crop up out of China. But back to slide 5 and the FX overview, you can see how Aussie and CAD stick out with their very strong trending readings. Canadian dollar even more so than the Aussie. And I put up EuroCAD just to see one of the big relative movers of late. And the small insert there as well, you can see that the Canadian two-year yields have outperformed the U.S. over the last few months, especially, of course, since the March banking turmoil. And that has been a driver of Dollar Canada staying at the lows of the range. A lot is priced in, though. So the Bank of Canada needs to deliver today, I think, to justify where the Canadian dollar is and guide for more tightening. About 50-50 on whether they actually hike today, and a full hike of 25 basis points priced for the July meeting. So that'll be the focus in FX. The dollar still sort of in limbo. The European currency is somewhat weak, but the broader picture not really sending any consistent signals. But I'll tell you, we need to go to your space because really the dollar outlook, I think, is going to be determined by this whole story around the Treasury having to rebuild its general account and potential liquidity pinch during that process. So take us through the latest on where your focus is as we look at some big issuance coming up from the U.S. Treasury.
Yes, John, my issue is, my focus actually, is on these U.S. Treasury T-bills auctions. And I'm going to take you on slide 6. And on Monday, we had the 3-month T-bills and 6-month T-bills auctions, and they were offered at a yield above 5.15%. Why do I say 5.15%? Because that's the interest rate that is paid on bank reserves at the Federal Reserve. So when we talk about this increase of issuance, because the Treasury has to raise cash for the TGA, when that happens, we are going to see liabilities at the Fed decreasing. And we have two kinds of liabilities at the Fed. We have money market fund in the RRP, reverse repo facility, and we have also bank reserves. In the RRP, money funds are paid 5.05% in interest, while bank reserves are paid 5.15%. The big point here, John, is that if we see these cash, so bank reserves, are moving to T-bills because they offer a pickup over the interest rate that they get at the Fed, then liquidity is going to drain from market. And, you know, like that's a risk that is added in already fragile market. And it might not happen anything this month. But I want just to remind everybody that the Treasury has to issue to raise around $500 billion by the end of June for the TGA. And market is estimating that has to rise to raise another $500 billion. We are not sure if by the end of the year or by the end of September. So what I'm saying here is that if liquidity decreases this month, then we are entering in a summer where liquidity is obviously lacking, might not be sufficient. And if the U.S. Treasury needs to continue to issue debt, there might be risk for a liquidity squeeze.
Interesting. You know, this whole setup when you have the VIX, as we just pointed out, collapsing to these lows not seen since before the pandemic. So the market's certainly not showing much signs of fear, but of course we'll have to see how this actually shakes out. And then over in Europe, you're making the point that you think that the yields have gotten too low, I guess, at the front end of the European yield curve?
Yes. So I'm going to take you on slide number 7. And here you see the 2 years German government bond yield and against the ECB deposit facility rate. And as you can see, the two-year chance are offering an yield that is much less than the ECB deposit facility rate. And that rate is going to increase by at least 25 basis points by next ECB meeting. But the market is forecasting that is going to raise by 50 within summer. So the big point here is that in Europe, we will definitely see more bear flattening of the yield curve in the next couple of months. And those 2 year shots will need to offer a higher yield and basically try to reach the ECB deposit facility rate.
All right. Now, back to the equity market. Peter, we had a couple of earnings reports rolling in. One of those from Inditex, as you discussed on your stocks to watch today there on slide 8.
Yeah, the Spanish retailer, fast fashion retailer, came out with a Q1 result, and their Q1 for the fiscal year 2024 ended in April. They beat on both revenue and operating income. Their growth margin hit the highest level in a decade. It was quite, as some analysts have been saying, quite a stunning result. It seems like they're driving a lot of efficiencies across their store network. So that's a very positive story for Inditex. I think some of it is also, you know, this inventory cycle that is playing out. They're capturing some of those dynamics. But the margin developments for Inditex, obviously very good. They didn't put out any, as I could see, no real changes to the outlook on growth. So investors are left guessing where the growth rates are headed there. And as we talked about recently, Europe has been slowing down. So it'd be interesting to see whether Inditex can keep their high growth rate. I think they delivered 13% revenue growth for that quarter compared to a year ago. Then Danske Bank, probably a bigger story, actually. It's Denmark's largest bank, one of the largest in Northern Europe. They have announced this morning they call it Forward 28, but it's essentially a lot of strategy goals for 2026. New strategy under the new CEO. Some of the targets have been put out here is a cost income ratio of 45% by 26. A return on equity of 13%, and then they are targeting a dividend payout ratio in the range of 40-60%. That would equate to some more than 50 billion Danish kroner of dividends over the next 3 years. The shares are up 4%. They're also exiting the retail business in Norway. They say they don't have critical mass. It would take a lot of investments to get to a point where the profitability and return on investment would be attractive enough. So the whole strategy is basically a capital or resource allocation inside the group and targeting numbers. If they can hit those, that would suggest that this is a bank that have finally left or turned a corner on after years of very bad news, litigation risk, and fines, etc., money laundering accusations, etc. So interesting story there developing in Danske Bank shares. And then I'm flagging Nvidia, and I'm flagging Nvidia today because technically it just keeps getting weaker and weaker, session by session, from those insanely high highs we had recently because of the whole AI hype. And the reason why I'm mentioning it is because the semiconductor stocks complex is overextended both on technically but also on valuation. And if we see a reversal in risk sentiment, then I think it will be expressed very quickly in Nvidia shares, simply because of the very big gains that have already been achieved by those that came in early, but also because this is where the liquidity is. This is one of the deepest liquidity pockets we have in the single stocks universe. So that's why I'm flagging Nvidia today.
All right. And I think you've covered most of these on the earnings watch. Inditex is already up today and already out. Anything else you wanted to highlight there before we go to the macro calendar?
Not more than just mentioning that one of the smaller technology companies, DocuSign, is reporting today. It's a $12 billion market cap company, one of the really the pandemic winners, growth coming down like the rest of the technology sector. As you can see on that little insert here on slide 9, it's all about the forward guidance. And especially for this company, it's all about can they continue to show, you know, consistency and margins being more robust, and they can improve profitability even more, then maybe there is actually a positive catalyst in the making potentially for DocuSign. They will be reporting after the US market close.
All right. And I should point out actually on FX, I didn't do so earlier, and I had a slide, I believe, in recent days on the Turkish lira, but really accelerating a sell-off. And that is on the appointment of what is seen as a more sort of market realistic a finance minister who will come with the policies that are needed. And there were some unsustainable policies that were designed to keep the Turkish lira artificially strong ahead of the election. Now that the election's out of the way and the new cabinet is presented, they're paying the price for those policies and for reality to return to the situation. So if you're wondering why the Turkish lira is down so sharply, it's probably an area to steer away from in the near term because of the volatility and liquidity problems. It's ironically paid very well to be long the Turkish lira, as they were they were cutting rates and had this supposed policy rate that didn't reflect the actual carry that you could get by holding lira. But now this situation is unwinding. Really nothing much to highlight on the macro calendar. There is that Bank of Canada meeting today. It is the focus in G10FX. We have the weekly EIA or Department of Energy, crude oil and inventories, product inventories up today. If you're looking at oil, also settling lower after the little bump post the weekend's OPEC plus production cut announcement. And not much to close out the week either. Some Norwegian CPI, the Chinese CPI and PPI up on Friday. And some, I'm sure we'll get Ola to talk about the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Also the situation with the crops has been, as we've just covered recently, a bit difficult. And in terms of the Fed, I think one of the last data points we'll be watching is next Tuesday's CPI release, which is not on the calendar there, but that will be one of the final key inputs ahead of the Wednesday FOMC meeting. We're still balanced on whether the Fed is set for another rate hike. That is a wrap for today. We will be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.